on the boundary adjustment?
Yes.
With Wilson and Day?
Yes.
And if Colleen, you're ready to start?
I am.
I'm going to start. With or without council members?
Okay. It's 6:01, so.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Just give me the thumbs up, Colleen, when you're ready. Okay.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the work session for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, July the 21st, 2015. I currently have 6:01 p.m. I'd like to call our work session to order. First item that we'll be speaking about tonight is a action item that'll come up in our council meeting. This is on a resolution indicating the intent of Cedar Hills to adjust the common boundary with Pleasant Grove regarding the Wilson and Day property. So, Mr. Goodwin, time is yours.
So we've had two residents of Pleasant Grove approach the city, requesting a boundary adjustment. The first one was Gina and Scott Day. They're the ones, as you recall, their septic system failed, and the city worked with them on hooking them up with city ladder or lateral to the city sewer system. That has been done. They are on City of Cedar Hills sewer. The other one, and Gina and Scott Day also expressed a lot of interest in connecting to the other city, the other city utilities such as PI. And then Brent and Neva Wilson also are on septic, I believe. And they also want to adjust their boundary based on what they've discussed with Gina and Scott.
Are they on the same street as the Days?
They're next door neighbors.
Next door neighbors, okay.
As I recall. Let's see. Yes, they're next door neighbors on 900 West. So they've initiated the request to initiate an adjustment of a common municipal boundary with Cedar Hills. And they've done the same with Pleasant Grove, to my knowledge. Is Colleen, are you aware if Pleasant Grove has this on their agenda as well? We need to have this on our agenda, which we do tonight, and then Pleasant Grove would need to have that on their agenda as well, and I'm not sure if they have that on their agenda tonight, so we'll have to get in touch with Pleasant Grove and see what the status is on their end.
We don't know what Pleasant Grove has discussed yet?
No. I've not heard any feedback from Pleasant Grove on this. I don't know if David's talked to Scott Darrington either, but it's been really quiet on this, and so I don't know what the status is.
Okay. Is that it?
That's it.
Anyone have any questions on this boundary adjustment with Pleasant Grove? If not, let us keep rolling. Let's see who's presenting on this. Are you familiar with the action item on open fires and fireworks? Is Mr. Bunker's not here?
Yes.
Okay, go right ahead.
So last city council we discussed the restriction on east of Canyon Road for all fireworks, not just aerials, but all fireworks, based on the feedback we received from Fire Marshal Ben Bailey and Chief Freeman. And as you've noticed, as you drive down Canyon Road, you'll see signs all over, announcing the ban. Yesterday, the city sent out a parlant message to the residents informing them of the ban and where they can, what the regulations are going forward, because the city, technically, you can start lighting fireworks tonight, so we wanted to preempt that. And so that's up and running, and so what we have now is a resolution to formally adopt those regulations.
So. Okay. So do you want to talk about, if you're familiar with Virginia's request.
Mrs. Rosenthal over adjacent to Mesquite Park. Yes, she had the request she complained about the amount of trash that went into her yard following the city allowing residents to ignite fireworks in Mesquite Park. But what we've done is Public Works is set to go out there and cordon off, I believe is it 100 feet?
125
feet from the property line out north, basically designating that as a spectator-only area to not ignite anything. So hopefully that reduces the amount of trash. Hopefully she finds nothing in her yard the next morning. So
she had told Mr. Bunker that that she realizes that this year it's probably too late because we already have preparations, but she doesn't want fireworks ever held in Mesquite Park.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have any idea where else? they could be held?
You know, that's difficult because Mesquite Park is an ideal location just given the flat topography of the park, the adjacent parking. There was the proposal that was brought up of the driving range, but staff was a little apprehensive about allowing the driving range simply because there's no direct parking, so you'd have to walk in off the street or be parking on the street or walking in down from parking at the community event center. And second, with the pond being there and all the dry weeds all around the driving range, we felt that it would actually increase the fire hazard based on a certain amount of activity. So we had some concerns regarding the liability of holding it at the driving range. I don't know that we discussed any other options as far as where people could go, because we felt like Mesquite Park was possibly the best place to go do that.
Do you have a feel for how many people showed up to light up fireworks on the 4th?
I heard it was a couple hundred. Do we know how many that was, David?
I don't know an exact number.
Jeff, did you have any idea?
I don't. There's a lot of debris. I know that. So.
I know we had a decent turnout.
Couple hundred. Pretty big crowd.
That's probably spectators too. I don't know how many. I think the more interesting number would be how many groups were there lighting fireworks? Because one group could be 20 people.
Do you know how late in the evening it went?
I don't. I don't know any of those details.
When we do fireworks, where do we light them from?
We light them from the pump house down here. But we have firemen on hand ready to put out a fire, and we always have a fire every year.
We didn't last year.
We didn't last year? No. Okay. But traditionally, we have had a fire every year we've done it. So that's why staff was really apprehensive about allowing fireworks on the golf course, just because of our track record there. And that's with a brush truck ready to go. So
does staff know whether it is a trash issue with Mrs. Rosenthal, or is it a noise issue, or is it everything?
Well, she specifically complained about the trash. I know that.
That's what I heard as well, is the debris.
I didn't hear any complaints about the noise. I didn't speak with her, but I'm sure that was a component.
Are there any other neighbors that no. back up against that have complained?
Not to my knowledge, no.
So what if we do this 100-foot, I don't remember what it says.
Just it's 100-foot perimeter 100 around
perimeter.
That south end.
And yet she still has a bunch of debris in her yard.
That's a good question. Who is responsible for policing and going the next day to make sure the trash is picked up? Is that the Public Works Department?
Well, the next day would be the 25th. It'd be Saturday morning. I don't know that we've designated anyone to go pick up trash, but... I think that's a discussion that David and I can have and figure that out. I think that's not a bad idea because people will use the park on Saturday morning. So,
and so if
be ready
no
for that.
One that's responsible for doing that, maybe that's part of the problem, is that there is a trash issue that is legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions on that? Okay. Let's move on.
Well, actually, I have one quick question. Do you know, do other cities do this as well, where they offer a central location?
Alpine does.
Where do they do?
There's a park that's kind of in the center of town. That's where I think we got the idea, is that they do that.
I don't know any other cities that do it. I know Pleasant Grove does fire restrictions basically north of the Murdoch Canal, but I don't know that they don't designate a place for them to go and light off fireworks other than go somewhere where it's legal. Just my understanding.
Okay, let's move on. Item number 10. And Mr. Mogg, I believe you're going to be presenting during council meeting. Why don't you come forward and talk to us about Hyslett's Hollow?
Yes, Mayor and Council. This issue has been an ongoing problem for Public Works for a number of years. Have 13 different items that we've been concerned with on the area, including Bonneville Shoreline Trail and above, and particularly in the area of Hyslett's Hollow. I can go through and discuss each of those, or if you have particular questions or items that you're more interested in that you'd like to start with, we can do that. How would you like to proceed with the discussion?
Well, I think maybe the way that I'd like to go ahead with this, council can chime in, which is that on Mrs. Reese's Street, Bay Hill. Now, they've already started construction, so is that blocked off already, Jenny?
It is, because they're putting up retaining walls and such right now.
Okay. So so that issue is maybe not going to be an issue on the Bay Hill side as much. On Hyslett's Hollow, then I understand that we have, I think, a gate at Hyslett's Hollow, not Jersey barriers, but a gate.
Correct.
And some boulders. And one of the boulders actually been moved. So what are your feelings on how you balance the desire of residents to be able to walk or bike up in that area without the threat of being shot at the same time allowing people who want to access the foothills and go up in Forest Service area to be able to do so? So do you have any thoughts in terms of how to balance that?
There's a few. I have, let me see if I can.
This is just kind of a list of the concerns that we have. We want to maybe be looking at those.
Is this the one that's in our packet? Oh, okay.
Is there?
Yeah. Thank you.
So the access itself, a few years ago, I believe it was in 2007, the ordinance was changed slightly in order to permit ATVs and motorcycles to utilize the open areas. And consequently, the gates that have been installed along the trail and at the head of Hyslett's Hollow have been set up so ATVs, motorcycles, horses, bicycles, etc. can pass through without stopping. There's at least a 54-inch wide passageway to get through there. We did that to accommodate that understanding. These gates have been provided and installed by the Water Users Association, Murdoch Trail. They've done that for us. But as I'm investigating this, and after that, city ordinance was in place in 2010. This was 5-2-6, designation of streets and highways as open for street legal all-terrain vehicle use, and it prohibits the unauthorized ATVs. It says that unauthorized ATVs are not permitted on any trail, sidewalk, or in or upon any public open space. So from my understanding of the more current code is that they are prohibited in our open, those are open spaces that the city owns up there from the developments that are directly below them. And so that would be of concern to us that the prior code also prohibited any motorized vehicle that was designed to be used on the street or highway. So all typical cars, trucks are already prohibited going up there. And I think this ordinance now prohibits even the ATVs. That being said, all of the other property up there that's not city owned is private property. So anybody utilizing that would be trespassing. The city also adopted an ordinance that acknowledges or adopted the code, the state code, on trespassing private property, public open property, which would be the Forest Service property. So there's some concerns there that's probably out of the realm of Public Works' jurisdiction to interpret or enforce. So, but that just make you aware, in response to your question, accessing that may not be an option.
So do you have a recommendation?
As far as Public Works Department is concerned, access there would continue to create problems for us. I mean, we would we already have difficulties with that. One of the city ordinances is that it's illegal for people to track dirt onto city streets. And we have very little means of enforcement of that, particularly in that area at all times of the day and night. And it is a serious problem, the dirt coming down onto that road, and that violates our city stormwater management plan, and we're responsible to enforce that, so we're continually cleaning up the dirt. Part of that management plan specifies that the number one contaminant within the city stormwater system is sediment. And it doesn't seem like a lot, but this past month we went into the retention basin across from the fire station and we removed 20 10-wheeler loads of sediment that has been deposited in there over the last 10 years that it's been built.
On the one north?
North from west.
The one the kids slid down into?
Mm-hmm, correct.
Wow.
It had completely covered all of the sumps and it was no longer functioning as it was designed, so we had to upgrade that.
So are you recommending limited access or complete restriction of access?
Well, from my point of view, complete restricted access is optimal for the Public Works Department. However, that may not be the best option for the city and the citizens.
Yeah, so I think that's the difficult thing is that clearly some residents want to be able to access the foothills and on ATVs or whatever, not on cars. So complete restricted access is maybe not realistic, but I understand optimal. So that's where the council could use some guidance in terms of what that limited access
right
would actually look like.
And I think the state guidelines are that in order for people to access that private property, they would need specific permission from the property owners to do that. So that would be an issue.
Okay, I have a whole bunch of questions. Uh-huh. So you said the gate was installed by Metropolitan Water Association, this
correct.
Recent one?
Yes.
And why did they install it?
They have been working with us. They had installed two other gates along the Bonneville Shoreline Trail. And as you look on our list here on L, they are very concerned about vehicles accessing that shoreline trail and jeopardizing their aqueduct. And I can see their concern. I've gone up personally when people have gone in there to do work in their backyards and they'll bring a track hole in and I've had to go up and talk to operators and say, do you understand you are currently straddling this aqueduct and you're digging under it? And they don't have any idea that it's there. So they're trying to protect their interest. So
you're saying then that the water company has the legal authority to put the gate up, right? They're not operating it. They don't have the legal authority?
Not really. They have an easement through there, but it is city property. And they have been in discussions with us and would discuss this
so
previously.
So does staff give them permission or they just take it on themselves?
No. We had worked with them to do that.
So I'm a little confused. So so the water company doesn't have the legal authority to do that, but we let them do it?
They can with our permission.
They supplied the gate for us.
So who has the legal authority?
We do, yes.
So we granted
that's
them
our
the
property.
Legal authority then. Okay.
Yeah.
And then do you know what the ordinance is about the tracking dirt on streets?
Yeah.
It's the same one contractors get hit with all the time.
I can't find it, though, but I'm sure I'm looking at the wrong spot.
It's in there.
This is Chapter 1, 6-1-3.
And then, lastly, and this might be a question for Mr. Shaw, but there is a resident who has stated that that by state law, if there is an access point that's been utilized for people for a period of years, whether it's on private property or not,
that if it's been continually used for a period of use, that we can then not block access off. And I don't know, I've never heard of that law, so I don't know the legalities of that.
There is a law, and go ahead.
Yeah, that's referred to as a prescriptive easement, which can be obtained over a period of years. There are a number of criteria that go along with that. I believe the time frame is 21 years, if I recall. It's been a while since I've studied prescriptive easements, but it's a long period of time. It has to be obvious use and without the permission of the owner. But that's across private property. You cannot get a prescriptive easement across publicly owned property.
But on private property, it's 21 years, you thought?
I believe so. I'd have to double check that.
There's a lot of things that have to happen during that 21-year period, too. I mean,
yeah, it has to be open and obvious use. Yeah. It has to be without the permission of the owner. They can't have sent you a notice saying, "Hey, quit using my land," or anything of that nature. Right. So.
And on that point, on letter M, we've had discussions with the Forest Service Department a couple of years ago and recently, and they maintain no public roads or trails in that area. And they have posted and have limited whatever access they can to that. Foot traffic, obviously, would not be prohibited, but they do not want motorized vehicles up there.
So another question I have, it's campaign season, you know, so mm-hmm. A lot of feedback's going back and forth, and I saw one of the candidates recommended that we have a gate that people can come get a key from the city if they want to access, and then that has to be returned, so if there were issues, they would know who. But you're saying from a public works perspective, that doesn't solve many of these other issues that you're seeing.
No, and that's been the biggest benefit, I guess you'd say, to the city. That the Bonneville Shoreline Trail, the city spent a substantial amount of money in developing it and improving it, and it's been quite destroyed. I mean, it's ready for a re-improvement. And so the gates were put on in three locations, and there is a form that they just come in and fill out, so that and we issue a key or we unlock that gate so that the city has given permission for people to access their backyards utilizing that trail. But we do know who's there and what they destroy, and they agree that if they damage it, then they'll repair it. And that's part of that understanding with the application that they submit.
Okay. And then my last question is, so the city portion of the property on the hillside is considered part of our open space plan. And you're saying that our ordinance says you can't ride ATVs or motorcycles on our open space.
Correct.
So should we even have allowed then access for ATVs and motorcycles if we're allowing them to break our ordinance?
Like I say, the ordinance in 2007 addressed that and allowed that, but the ordinance in 2010 kind of revoked that. I don't know that if that was just a oversight or what happened, but that's what I'm seeing.
Okay.
Like I say, that's out of public works.
So we may need to for that ordinance, I guess.
The context on the 2007 ordinance was that the city was putting in an irrigation line from the upper system to the lower zone. We were improving that trail along there. And we can go back and read the minutes from the council, but I remember the council had a discussion regarding ATVs being used along that trailway. And it was not a paved trail, it's just a gravel trail. And that was the intent of the council, that council back then, is to allow people ATV use of that graveled area. Now, the bulk of the property up there on that bench, on that interface, is private property. I don't know that the city should be in the position to tell residents, "Hey, go trespass on this private property." I think that would be something we need to be careful about. But The majority of it is private property. There is some open space, and then there is the corridor that the Metropolitan Water District has there, and the city has a trail right there. So it is limited on the areas that people could access.
So that the ordinance in was in Chapter 5, 6-5-2 on motor vehicle trespass. That was in 2007, and they did add under B4, they put off highway vehicles in permitted vehicles, and then that was not put in 2010. It strictly prohibits ATVs from being in those areas. But other areas that we are concerned of and that we've tried to address is the tracking of the mud, the erosion on the roads directly above Heisel's Hollow has diverted the storm water from the natural drainage, and it's now bringing it down just above Heisel's Hollow. And we've had to send people up with residents concerned that the water is now draining into their backyards, getting in their basements. And so we've been up there in the middle of the night trying to build berms and dig ditches and divert that water back onto Heisel's Hollow Road. And so the, one of the improvements that we made with the gate addition was a berm that can divert water into the gutters themselves, which isn't going to help our sediment problem, but it would kind of help with the drainage issues. The other part of that, at one time we tried to solve the problem by putting in a commercial construction site track out pad, large rocks that shake the mud off as you go over it. And that lasted for very little time. Filled up with mud quickly, and rocks were going down the road and created another nuisance, and it was not very successful.
So do you think that those issues have been resolved, like the drainage issue, the storm drain issues up there, or are you still working on that?
No, and a lot of that area where that drainage is coming from vehicles eroding the hillside is private property, and we would have limited means to go up there to try to do work, and we've looked at that. We've got bids to have that road redressed going to our water tank. It's a substantial amount, and we have tried to get some drainages in on that road to help, but it's a limited effort on that.
Okay. Anyone else have questions? No? Let's move on to our next item. Mr. Bunker, I think you're presenting during council meeting on the Harvey Boulevard traffic control area item.
Mayor and Council, this will be a discussion item during the regular meeting. We have considered the needs of residents down on Harvey Boulevard, 4600 West. In the past, we've had residents call, and they're concerned about the speeds on Harvey Boulevard and about the safety of vehicles approaching from the east heading west as vehicles are attempting to cross or turn on Harvey Boulevard from 4600 West. And so we actually looked at, earlier in the year, a proposal to do a roundabout in that intersection. Roundabouts are not cheap. They're quite extensive. It would take a lot of improvement to put a roundabout in, modification of curb gutter street profiles, possibly drainage. And roundabouts are not very friendly for pedestrians either. And so as we looked at that, that in combination with the cost of a roundabout led us to try to consider something else. And so one of the goals that we were trying to accomplish was
increasing the site distance as you're sitting at that intersection, especially looking east. And so we approached the Temple Shadows HOA to ask if we could modify their fence. Because the issue is, as you look east, that fence is so tall and it doesn't give you enough sight distance back on Harvey Boulevard. And those vehicles are moving at a pretty decent clip. The speed limit is 25 miles an hour. The 85th percentile speeds are more in the low 30s. So people feel more comfortable going faster on that road than the posted speed limit. That doesn't mean they're not breaking the law. That just means they feel more comfortable, and so that the average user of that road says, hey, I feel in control enough in my vehicle to go faster than the posted speed limit. We, in those discussions with Temple Shadows, one of their concerns is having their residents come out of their community, which is a completely enclosed community with a fence. And so they really all exit out the main entrance of the subdivision. And when they walk to the chapel that's across the street, they have to walk all the way down to the intersection, cross, and then walk all the way back to the east, back to the chapel. So they have expressed a desire through the years to have some kind of a crossing, mid-block crossing. Mid-block crossings are not really desirable, to be honest, unless they're done correctly. And so in this discussion with modifying the fence, we talked about installing what's called a chicane. It's also called a choker, and it's where the width of the street cross section is narrowed. And we have a chicane, a modified chicane, on Morgan Boulevard, where we did the same thing. We kind of narrowed the street cross section. What happens when you narrow the street cross section is, as people approach, they feel less comfortable going fast. They know they have to slow down. And so it decreases speed. It's a traffic calming device. And so we talked to them about having a chicane. One of the other advantages to a chicane would be that if a pedestrian were to cross at the chicane, they would be able to clear the oncoming traffic to their left if they were crossing to the north. And if that traffic were clear, they could cross to the center of the roadway. At the center, they would have a safety spot because it would be in an island. And then they could clear the other traffic to the right, and then they could proceed across the rest of the street. And our thought there was, some of the residents of Temple Shadows, while they may have been Olympians in their previous life, maybe not be so fast now. My thoughts were, hey, let's give them a safe spot. Let's give them a way to get across that busy road that's safer than what it would be if it was just a straight shot. And so that is what we have been trying to present to the residents there, to see if they would be in favor of a device like that. In your packet, you have a artist rendition. I use the term artist loosely. Chandler made this. It may not look exactly like this, but it gives you an idea of what it would be. And there would be an island in the center. The lanes would come up and narrow. We would put a bulb out against the existing curb and gutter, and provide handicap ramps to get residents down to that grade level. And then they would cross. This device would be just west of the existing entrance in the... What would be, if you were looking at the map here in the bottom right-hand corner, you can see the entrance to Temple Shadows right there. It's stamped colored concrete. This has not been determined exactly, but fairly close to where it would be. It might shift 20 feet, 50 feet, somewhere in that range, depending on what we need there. One of the design considerations for that would be anytime there's a change in your cross section, you need to give drivers enough time to react to that. So we need to stay far enough away from the curve so that as the cars are coming around the curve, that they actually can see the device and say, hey, I can react to that. And so in the ASHTO manual, the design for roadways, we looked at site distance, and that green line that you see there represents the distance that they need to see the device and someone in the crosswalk. So what we're showing here is that if a car were in the lane heading eastbound, that they could actually have the sight distance, the proper sight distance to see that. So that's one of the considerations that we're looking at as we place this device. So that also included is a preliminary cost estimate. These numbers are real rough. It does not include drainage considerations necessarily. Our hope is that we can redo that curb and gutter line and still have enough slope in the curb and gutter to have the drainage go through the device. If we have to modify the device to handle drainage, then it would increase that cost. And then also, if you look at that map, there is a fence line right on the back side of the sidewalk. Unfortunately, it's right underneath where it says Utah County parcel map. That's where the fence is. And we would actually pull that fence back and remove probably two or three trees in order to provide the site distance back to the east from the cars stopped at 4600 West. And that would be an additional cost. We did not have a cost for the fence removal and relocation yet. So that would be in addition to this cost. So a roundabout can cost upwards of a couple hundred thousand dollars. They're expensive, and there are drawbacks. This project would cost significantly less. It's not foolproof. There are still considerations to look at with regards to this design as well. But it appears that it could be potentially a good compromise for the residents there.
So just so the council knows on this, so this is what we've been talking to Temple Shadows about. And so they like the idea, but that's not their preference. And so you need to know that that's not their preference.
What is their preference?
I thought I'd tell you.
Awesome.
And so their preference is a four-way stop on 4600 West and Harvey Boulevard. So staff's not particularly excited about that because the traffic is not equal. East-west traffic far succeeds northwest traffic.
And 10 to 1 probably, I would think,
isn't it? Yeah. And so you, by creating a four-way stop, you potentially create traffic jams, particularly during pickup and drop-off times at school. So, but you should just know that's their preference. They're probably going to come tonight and talk about that. So it's not as if they're opposed to the chicane at all. They're not opposed to it. They're just saying that if you want to know what our preference is, it's a four-way. And they recognize that at some point in the future, then a road will be probably punched in from Highland that connects to Harvey Boulevard, and then they realize at that point the four-way stop will have to be removed. But they think that day is far off. I think they're probably right about that. But still, you'd be putting in a four-way only to take it out at some future point in the future. So let's just keep that in mind. Go ahead.
I'm curious about that because that's one of the things I've always recommended is a four-way stop. How badly do we think it would affect traffic? Because there's a four-way stop not far from Cedar Ridge, and I've never heard of it causing considerable issues in the morning.
Yeah, four-way stops, when they're not put in appropriately, when there's not the proper balance in the street movements, what it causes is that the traffic that is consistently going east and west on this road, which far outweigh the north and southbound traffic, every time they come to the four-way and they look, there's no car. people become complacent because there's never a car there. So they start to just blow through the sign, possibly not come to a full stop, not clear the intersection. They don't treat it appropriately because it doesn't warrant that kind of attention typically. So they've actually shown that when you install four-way stops inappropriately, it's actually worse for safety. The other thing with four-ways, if they're placed inappropriately, people want to make up that time. They feel like, oh, I had to stop and there was no one here. Now I've got to make up that time. And they actually show, their studies have shown that in between stop signs, they actually speed up because they want to increase, they have somewhere to be, they want to get there, and they want to make up that time when the four-way stop's placed inappropriately. The other thing is with a four-way, it does not solve the issue of getting these residents across the street to the chapel. With a four-way stop, we would still need to send them clear to the intersection, have them cross, and have them come all the way back to the church. So it doesn't satisfy their desire to get across that road, which, unless we make it a safe way to cross, my recommendation would be not to just paint lines and say, hey, here's your crosswalk. It's not going to work. It's going to be dangerous. The chicane, it actually does reduce traffic speeds. Studies have shown that these chicanes reduce it, and I don't know if I put that in here. I want to say it was 14%. I'll double check that number. But they do. A chicane actually reduces the speeds, which is a safer condition when you're trying to cross a road if the speeds go down. And so the four-way really wouldn't be an advantage to the residents to cross the street. They would still need to go down to the intersection and cross and come back. A four-way stop would be cheaper. A four-way stop, hey, it's just adding a couple more signs, and that can happen. This is a collector road. It's meant to move traffic. We've had a policy that we don't have driveways. If you look at this design on this road, you'll notice we don't have driveways backing out onto it for a reason. We designed this road initially years ago to be a collector road and to not have stops, to not have driveways. Our intention here was to move traffic and to have the city funnel to this road and get out to a major collector or an arterial road like 4800 West. So that's the purpose of this road. There used to be many more signs on Cedar Hills Drive, many more four ways that were unwarranted, but the city didn't really understand the need or the negative effects of four ways. And we went through and did a study years ago and made certain intersections four ways for a reason and certain intersections not four ways. And so the proper application of a four way is good, but when you put them in the wrong application, it can cause other problems.
So I would imagine that Cedar Hills Drive, though, is more of a collector road right now than Harvey is, especially that portion of Harvey. But we have two four way stops on Cedar Hills Drive. So are we seeing the issues that you discuss on Cedar Hills Drive?
Yeah. Yeah. The reason why the two are remaining, one is a sight distance problem, and that one's at the top of Cottonwood, where Cottonwood takes off and heads up. So if you look at the sight distance coming up that slope, that road was not designed properly. But it was designed many, many years ago before the city adopted standards for roadway design. So it was built improperly. That's the reason that four-way stop is there. The other one is at
4000.
Cedar Hills Drive and 4000 West, and there's another issue there because the intersection is not straight. There's an offset skew to that intersection. That's another intersection we considered for a roundabout. And it would be a decent design there for a roundabout. But again, the east-west traffic greatly exceeds the northwest. Not so much on 4000 West. There is a lot of traffic that comes up 4000. So that one's not it's not as different on that road. But the other one was a sight distance issue, and the residents didn't feel comfortable removing the four-way with that sight distance issue. If that road would have been designed correctly with a proper site distance to the intersection, then it would have been safe to remove the four-way.
So do we have those actual statistics? Because here's my concern is that these residents know that the chicane is going to give them easier access to the chapel, yet they still prefer the four-way stop. So they prefer the four-way stop even over easier access to their chapel. So
I don't know if that's the case.
Okay.
That's one or two members of their group that have said that. I don't know if they've had a meeting and said, hey, how many of you would prefer this or not?
Okay.
That's what one or two members are saying.
Okay.
So I'm not confident.
Are they an HOA?
Yeah, they're an HOA.
So maybe it would, I don't know, be beneficial to get some feedback from their HOA. But that's my only concern is if we say, well, this is cheaper and this is what the residents in this area want, but we're going to go this other route because statistically it's safer. Do we have those statistics on hand to back us up?
We do, and not only that, but we have our design criteria for a road like this. Our design criteria is that we don't do four-way stops on collectors like this road.
Well, I understand that, but it's really not a collector road yet.
It is. Look at the width of it. Look at how it's designed. Look at how there's no driveways on it. It's a collector road today. And the traffic volumes. Yeah, the traffic volumes, especially as you approach the school, would indicate that it is a collector road. Absolutely.
David, still, even though there could be a chicane, do you still feel because people are used to driving fast on that road that there'd be some danger for those crossing, or do you think that it'd be pretty safe for people crossing?
You know, it's a big, wide road. One of the things I like about the chicane as it narrows up that cross section is they don't have as far to go. Mm-hmm. So they can look at the traffic coming in the lane that they have to cross, mm-hmm. and then they don't have to go across the whole street. They can get to the center and get to a safe spot.
Do we have little flashing yellow lights that tell people to slow down that could be put there temporarily, or do we have
sure.
anything like that?
Yeah.
Until people get used to it if we did do a chicane?
Yeah.
And we have one on Cottonwood.
Yeah.
That
we have a flashing sign that shows speed on Cottonwood. Yep. But I think what you're saying is
it's like a yellow light.
Like a yellow light, a warning saying, yeah. Hey, here's a new
I would
device.
Suggest we do that if we do a chicane just until people get used to it, or
yeah.
maybe the long haul, I don't know, depending on how dangerous it feels for people crossing.
Yeah, when we modified the four ways throughout the city years ago, we actually put a new placard that said two-way instead of four-way, and then we put a light there that flashed so that they would take their attention to the two-way versus the four-way. So that's a good suggestion.
What did the residents say about lowering their fence?
They still want a fence in. We would actually have to move it. And so there would be a new fence installed. They just don't want to have access to these yards by taking the fence all the way down. So we would actually put up a fence the same height, and it would basically go to the south of those existing trees, those two or three trees that would need to be removed, and we would just reinstall it at the same height.
What's the length of that fence that we'd have to reinstall?
Let me look here. It's approximately about 100 feet of fence.
So you would just be moving it back further into their property?
Yeah.
100 feet of 6-foot fence is about 30 bucks a foot.
Okay. I know we can go on, but we need to take a break before council meetings start. So let's take about a 10-minute break at this time, and then we'll come back ready to start at 7 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you.